Everyone, welcome back to another episode of A Friend for the Long Haul. I am absolutely thrilled today to welcome Julie Hunter. Julie is a chronic illness movement coach, an ACE certified personal trainer, an orthopedic exercise specialist, and a sports performance specialist. And she runs, I'm going to check with you now because I've said movement with ME, but I think it could also be movement with me.
It absolutely can. However you want to say it, however you want to look at it, it's fine with me. The intention was for it to be movement with ME, but I usually just say movement with me. It rolls off the tongue, and I work with a lot of people that do not have ME. So whatever works for you works for me.
Awesome. I love it. I am just so grateful for you joining us today. Julie runs the Movement With Me account on Instagram. She has a new website, movementwithme.com. And Julie, thank you for being here. Can you tell us a little bit about you, the human?
Well, thank you so much for having me, Beth. I was so grateful to get the invitation. It's really nice to be able to talk to other people who understand what it's like to live with long COVID. And I just appreciate what you're doing for the community. I think it really means a lot to so many. So thank you. Me as a person, as a human, that's a tough question. It might be the most difficult question you have for me because I'm really still trying to figure that out. Mm-hmm. I've always identified by what I do. You know, I was an athlete, I'm a coach, or, you know, if I would identify by my health status, I was disabled, I was chronically ill, whatever it may be. So I'm still trying to figure out who I am outside of those labels. I know that I'm very much an introvert, an empath, but I'm also playful and spontaneous. So yeah, that's about all I know.
I'm with you
at the moment.
I am also going through this reconnection with myself and trying to figure out what I like and who I am. And everything has changed in ways that I couldn't have anticipated. So it's like making a new friend if I can extend myself enough self-compassion to get there that way certain days. But I understand. And I think your answer is a really good one. So I appreciate it. It's actually led me to a question, which is you work with so many people with chronic illness. Do you also notice a pattern of people with chronic illness being deep feelers, big empaths, people-pleasing type people? Because I'm noticing a pattern of that, I think, a lot.
Absolutely. There's definitely a connection there. I think that, you know, anyone who tends to overthink things might be a little bit more susceptible to chronic illness. But, you know, it's not easy to trust in what you're doing all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. And you lose trust in your body as well. And that's really hard to reconnect to. That's another big one.
Definitely.
Definitely. Okay. So I stalked your website. And like we said, you have a new website. It's movementwithme.com. So it's aligned with your Instagram and your business. So you mentioned being a health and fitness coach for over a decade. And I know that you specialize in endurance performance. You are such a badass. It's wild. But can you tell us a little bit about your career and how this all emerged?
Absolutely. So I started coaching back in 2012. I was finishing up my degree in exercise science. And actually, one of the reasons why I decided to change my major to exercise science in order to become a coach was because of health challenges. My intention was to go to medical school, but after giving it some more thought, I really wanted to make sure that I was prioritizing my health and well-being, because prior to that, I had dropped out of school twice. I had left jobs all because of health issues that stemmed from an episode of mono of Epstein-Barr when I was in college. So that's when a lot of my health problems began, and they really forced me to figure out how to live my life in a way that would always protect my health, I guess, to the best of my ability. So I was also racing bikes at that time. And I know it sounds counterintuitive to say that I had a lot of health issues, but I was racing my bike. I was figuring out how to work with what I could do. And ultimately, racing and riding my bike helped me achieve a new level of health. So everything kind of came together and led me in the direction of endurance performance coaching. I was mainly working with cyclists. So that's where it all started. And that's what I decided to focus on for the first 8 years of my coaching career. Once I became ill with COVID in 2020, I started to feel like a little bit of an imposter in that endurance coaching world. I wasn't in a position to expand my business, take on new clients. I was actually letting clients go and not really taking on new work for the first year and a half that I was unwell. But that gave me the opportunity to start shifting in the direction of movement coaching, working with individuals who had chronic illnesses, because between my personal experiences, my education, and everything in between, I felt like that was the place for me.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense because you already had all of the experience of dealing with having been chronically ill for so long that you had sort of insights that a lot of people new to chronic illness with getting hit with COVID wouldn't have had. And that's one of the things I'm so grateful to sort of the ME/CFS community for, is they could have told us to F off really early on. But I feel like we're only as far as we are with a lot of us still being here and a lot of the progress we've made because they sort of adopted us. And I can understand any resentment that would be out there as well, but I'm so grateful for the help that we've received. So I completely understand where you're coming from with that. I think something that often gets confused in our community is the difference between graded exercise and the type of movement coaching that you do. Can you talk about that a little bit?
So my approach is fully customized, always holistic in nature. There's no set plan or set rate of progression. It really depends on the individual, their current abilities and limitations. And we always wait until their body gives us signals that it's time to start doing more. We're not pushing, we're not forcing, we're figuring out what can be done now despite the symptoms, and then letting their body be our guide to give us those signals that it's time for more. But, you know, it's one thing to follow a plan, but you can't follow that plan exactly to a T without running into an issue. And I think that goes for anyone and everyone, any type of exercise plan. You know, you buy something offline and you're like, okay, I'm going to do this. It's very rare that someone can follow that plan to a T and not encounter some sort of setback. So in addition to creating this customized plan, we want to learn how to listen to the body and be okay making modifications, allow ourselves to be flexible with the plan and skip or modify a session if needed, because resting sooner rather than later is going to be the most beneficial thing in the long run.
That is really hard for me because I am one of those people that puts completely unrealistic expectations on myself. And always have. It's just my personality. So I think I can see that as a defeat. And being able to work with someone who reminds you that it's not, I think is so important. So I haven't actually signed up to work with you. I want to, but it's all the same old excuses. I know that I've not been in the right space for it because of life. But it's funny where I do encounter people who are like, I'm working with Julie. I have a very close friend here who's working with you. And I help co-admin a long hauler support group in Austin. And we had a post recently that was like, do you all know about Julie from me? It's just like, yes, I love Julie. So I love that you have that approach. And I'm sure that there's a lot of compassion built in and trying to help us have compassion for ourselves as well, because this is a whole new body experience. And again, having that self-compassion and giving yourself a break is a big deal. And also, I think something I noticed just as I've become more mobile is certain exercises, I get angry after I do certain things. And I think that I haven't been good at noticing what movement stresses my body beyond my capacity. And it sends me into these tailspins of anxiety. And I think it's like a cortisol thing. So it's very smart, I think, to have someone with your knowledge to keep you out of those traps, because I've done myself some disservices, quite honestly.
Yeah, no, I think it's certainly helpful to have someone who gets it and someone who sees resting as a win, as a success, yeah, not a failure.
It's medicine.
Exactly. And we, you know, we build fitness, strength, capacity through the movement itself, but we only gain that fitness, strength, capacity when we rest and recover afterwards. So there always has to be a balance. And sometimes we can't predict what the body is going to do or how it's going to respond to something. And we do have to take into consideration all the other stress that might be weighing on an individual, because that will affect how their body responds and recovers from an exertion. So we look at all of that and then figure out, okay, how can we safely incorporate movement in a way that's nourishing and beneficial rather than harmful? Then that's where we're going to start seeing improvements.
Makes tons of sense. I'm also curious about if you can elaborate a little bit about how movement for folks like us impacts things like dysautonomia, because I know that our autonomic nervous systems sort of just get trained to, like, we lay down now after we've been stuck that way for so long. So how do we, it's all part of the same thing, but particularly the type of movement plans that you're talking about, how does that impact retraining that nervous system?
Absolutely. So for dysautonomia, for POTS, movement is highly beneficial. We are, in a way, training the body to better shift in and out of whatever state it needs to be in. Sympathetic versus parasympathetic. Sympathetic for being active and focused, parasympathetic for recovering and healing. So we need movement in order to strengthen that parasympathetic side, because a lot of people will get stuck in that sympathetic fight or flight state who have dysautonomia. So by improving our aerobic capacity or aerobic fitness, that's one way to really improve the strength of the parasympathetic nervous system so that the body more easily shifts into that relaxed healing state when it needs to be there. Unfortunately, because dysautonomia can limit activity, it becomes a little harder to do traditional type exercises, even walking or recumbent cycling. So we want to find the least stressful way to condition the body, to at least start conditioning the body so that it will better tolerate being upright. And then we can begin increasing those more traditional type exercises.
Yeah. Is dysautonomia like one of the biggest challenges that you're seeing with long COVID patients?
It can be initially. We often see pretty quick improvements with the right approach to movement. So then the remaining concern is often post-exertional malaise rather than those, you know, traditional POTS-like symptoms.
It took me a really long time to recognize that it's not just physical movement that causes my post-exertional malaise. It's worse with stress. And when I get those adrenaline spikes, because I've gone into a fight or flight sort of mode, that impacts me way more than the physicality. I know it's different for everyone, but it really took me a good couple of years to figure that out.
And
that
it's really tricky.
Yeah.
It's tricky.
Now you're going to make me sing, it's tricky. I really appreciate the informational type posts that you put out. I feel like I've learned a lot from your account, and that has led to sort of a lot of community building as well. How have you found support for yourself within our community?
Doing what I do, creating my Instagram account, launching movement coaching, it's given me that purpose and passion I needed to navigate those harder times. I feel like I had the tools I needed to support myself and facilitate my recovery, but something was missing. And so to be able to get that purpose and that passion from the community and create this space and have this platform to provide information, to me, that's invaluable. And I'm just so fortunate to be able to do what I do and share that information with others, because my number one goal as a coach is to give my clients all the tools and information they need to move forward on their own without me someday. So even if I'm not working one-on-one with someone, I want them to have what they need to continue moving forward in their journey.
Following on from that, one of my favorite things I read on your website is that you said you consider it a privilege to work with folks through all of this. And I really love that. What have you noticed from your clients that's brought them hope or made them feel more empowered while working with you?
It's just so rewarding to see my clients open up their worlds again and chip away at some of that anxiety and fear that they might have about exertion. The way I do things, the intention is to help my clients build confidence and safety in their bodies again, which is stripped away after that repeated physical trauma that is a flare-up or post-exertional malaise or whatever it may be. So, you know, that's one thing, just watching them achieve their goals and do things that they thought were impossible. The other thing is, you know, it's really a privilege to have other people put their trust in me after their bodies have let them down, and even, you know, their medical professionals have let them down, being willing to try something that's a little different and, you know, work with someone that you've never met. To me, I'm just so grateful for the opportunity to do that.
It just really makes me think about the ripple effect of it. You know, if you've been stuck in bed for so long and you get that win of a 5-minute walk outside, that just improves your confidence. Your mental health feels like, yeah, I did it. And that impacts everybody around you and your family. And it just kind of continues to build. And I think that's a lovely, lovely thing. So you're not just helping that individual person. And it's really nice.
Yeah. And a lot of people come to me feeling stuck. And the one thing, well, one of the many things that movement can give them is a feeling of control or empowerment, like you said. They're doing something to facilitate their healing. They're making a difference. They're tapping into their body's abilities to heal, adapt, and grow stronger, rather than waiting around until somebody finds a cure. You know,
right.
They're doing something right now in this moment that is helping. And I think that makes a huge difference in quality of life, in finding that level of hope, and determination to just keep going, despite it being such a difficult journey.
Yeah, because I know how it feels when you are feeling completely the opposite of that, and that you get into feeling like a burden, and it's a horrible, horrible space to be. So I really appreciate what you're offering. One of the things that I especially appreciate about you, and as I mean, I don't have a huge account, but I have more followers now than I did at the beginning of the year by a significant number. And I get so many DMs from people who are like, I have the cure, or try my Dollar General version of the supplement that you're already taking and I'll give you a code. And I have looked at a lot of different programs and had a lot of different offers. And my favorite thing about you is, everything about you is, and your program is out there. Your pricing is on your website. It's very clear. There are people who are offering programs where you have to have an initial consult and then you have to do this. And you don't know that later they're going to say it's $6,000 to go through 3 months with me. And they might not even actually be have the credentials that they're claiming to have. So when I looked at your website, I was like, this is all so clear. There's this program I can do for this amount. There's this for this amount and this level of support. And I just wanted to tell you that I really appreciate that, because I have been in situations where I've been so desperate that I'd be willing to throw any amount of money if I had it at something. I know people who have gone into credit card debt doing that and come out with no improvements. So one of the reasons I really wanted to have you come on and have this chat is because you have been one of the most consistent, transparent, supportive larger accounts that I have seen throughout the 4 years I've been stuck in this club. So I wanted to give you an opportunity to kind of talk about the different levels of support that you offer and how people can work with you if they want to or can work with you.
Thank you so much for acknowledging that. I really tried to keep in mind the financial burden that comes along with living with and managing a chronic illness. I know firsthand what that's like. So I tried to make my prices as reasonable as possible.
I mean, a girl's still got to live.
Yeah. And
girl's got bills.
You know, but I probably wouldn't have picked coaching as a career if I was doing this just for the money. You know, it's something I truly care about, and I would rather help more people than raise my prices. So, you know, there's three different levels of coaching. So not always, but hopefully there's, you know, a level that will fit within one's budget. They're designed in a way where you can downgrade over time once we get a better understanding of how your body responds to activity, and then you're able to do more on your own with less accountability and feedback from me. However, you do not need to start at the highest level and work your way down. You can easily start at the lowest level. We would do an initial consultation prior. The fee is included in your first month in coaching, so there's no additional fee. We would make sure that we have all the information we need to start your program. And then there's never any commitment beyond 1 month at a time. So if you want to upgrade, downgrade, cancel, you can do that at any point once your monthly billing date comes around. So it's kind of like a monthly subscription that you can cancel at any time with no long-term commitments. And there's different options to fit each person's needs and wants. So level one is what I consider a jumpstart program. And in addition to having your custom movement plan laid out on an app called True Coach, it's kind of like a personal training app, very user-friendly, easy to use. We would also have a weekly coaching call, a 30-minute coaching call to discuss your wins from the week, things that you could have done better or differently. We can use that time to discuss pacing, activity management, goals, coming up with some short-term goals to work towards that will help you reach those long-term goals, navigating any challenges that you might be facing on your healing journey that don't specifically relate to intentional movement or maybe relate to it in one way. But if you're looking to expand other activities like driving, leaving the house, socializing, returning to work, traveling, anything like that, that's a great topic to discuss on the coaching calls I offer. So coaching calls are included in level one. They are optional in level two and level three. So typically all of our communication would be through the app. There's a messaging feature, and I would be able to respond to completed movement activities. And then if you wanted to book a coaching call, you would get a discounted rate for my 30-minute coaching call if you are enrolled in a monthly program. So there's a little added benefit for regular clients to, you know, book those calls, but it really is up to the person and what they need and want out of coaching. And I'm happy to support them in whatever way I can.
I love the flexibility of that, because you could be having a great week or so, sign up for the most intensive offering, and then crash, and then get into the loop of feeling like you did too much and now you've overextended. So I love that you have that monthly flexibility. People can take it as it works for them, but they have access to you for guidance. And I didn't realize that it also included things like returning to work or travel or driving. I still can't drive. It's one of the main things that ruins me cognitively. So that's really good to know. I appreciate you going through all of those, because you really, it sounds like you need a therapy degree as well.
Yeah, it's very much a combination of life coaching, health coaching, and fitness coaching. So all of the things I'm passionate about and love to do, this is my opportunity to do that. And it's amazing.
I love that you get to do that. I have been saying recently that the job that I have right now, if I was an independently wealthy person, I would still volunteer to do it part-time. But if they're going to pay me to do it full-time right now, I'm so thrilled, and it's so in line with who I am and what's on my heart. So I always get very excited for people when they get to do the thing that feels like them and support themselves with it. So I'm very happy for you that you were able to eke that out for yourself. It's amazing.
Thank you. I'm very lucky and fortunate to do what I do. I'll say that over and over again. You know, if I could, I would go thank, you know, 2010, 2011, Julie, who decided that she was going to become a coach instead of going to medical school. I would, give her a big high five and say, good choice.
Yeah, I think you're perfectly suited for it. It's great.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right. I always ask the same three questions of guests on the podcast. And I kind of came to them because of experiences of my own, but it's been really interesting to see how people answer them. And the first one could sort of be taken in a toxic positivity, gross way, but that's not how I'm trying to frame it. And the first question is, if there have been any unexpected silver linings for you that have come out of your experience with chronic illness? And I fully expect some people to say no.
My list is so long. It really, from the beginning, within the first 2 or 3 weeks, I realized that this was not something that was going to go away overnight. And I said to myself, this is an opportunity for me to change some parts of my life for the better. And it's really difficult to make changes unless you're forced to. So ultimately I was forced to make changes, but it was the best thing that could have ever happened, because I was in a really bad place mentally, physically, emotionally, in the months before I got sick. So kind of gave me a clean slate to reflect on where I was and what I was doing. And yeah, I was able to take the necessary steps to improve my quality of life. So that's really a big one. I also did a lot of things that I probably would not have done if I hadn't have gotten sick, like drive solo across the United States 4 times, live in different states. I surprise myself by doing those things. And a lot of people don't know I'm a very private person, and I didn't share a lot about what I was doing or where I was living. So yeah, I gained this new level of strength and fearlessness. I had some of that before, but I kind of lost it. And I was feeling super low right before I got sick, kind of worthless. And there were a number of reasons why I felt that way. But yeah, it just showed me I could do anything that I wanted to if I had a choice in the matter. And I was able to figure out how to do these things to make sure they fit within my limits, because I was still sick. I was still limited at that time. But yeah, if I had not gotten sick and just stayed at home doing the same thing, riding my bike 15 hours a week and, you know, coaching athletes, I wouldn't have done any of that.
Yeah, it's reignited for me a sort of curiosity that I didn't have for a while, because it's so easy to get used to the mundane and what you have to do to get through each day. And then I was so limited with what I was able to do. And like, there was a whole period of time where I couldn't eat and it was a mess, that I think as my nervous system started coming out of fight or flight, I was much more touched by the little things and realized that I got pretty close to losing all out on everything. And it's really reignited for me that curiosity and that passion and that want to experience everything I can while I can.
Yeah.
So driving across the country 4 times is otherworldly to me right now, just because I can barely drive to McDonald's. So I think that's really badass and really cool. That's a very good answer to the question. Thank you for sharing all that.
Life's really about creating special memories. It's not about, you know, what we do. It's about being present and enjoying the moment and having things to remember during those harder times, you know, having positive things to remember and think about.
Yeah. I can be very, very hard on myself and very strict with myself, trying to do everything right. And I saw someone talking about like the longevity movement and all of that stuff. Who cares if you're miserable while you're biohacking yourself, trying to like be here 5 minutes longer, if the quality of the time that you're here with your people, you're neurotic and giving yourself hell. It's not life. So
exactly.
Yeah, I really appreciate that perspective. Thank you. The next one has come out of the fact that I lost the ability because of executive dysfunction post-COVID to listen to music for a very long time. If your long COVID had a theme song, what would it be?
So I'm a big fan of Alanis Morissette, and we're talking 1990s Alanis. So I would have to say the song You Learn, because it's about dealing with all the stuff that life throws your way and learning from it. You know, you cry, you scream, you laugh, you live, but you learn and you move on. And that's what this experience has been about for me. You know, no matter what, I'm constantly learning and growing and evolving. And that makes things a little bit more fun, a little bit more exciting. You know, I treated my recovery as a big series of experiments to make it more interesting. And so I was able to constantly learn and move forward with that new information.
Yeah, the full gamut of the human experience right there. But it really does, you have to be open and willing to learn from it though as well. I call it sciencing the shit out of myself. I guinea pig myself and oddly enjoy the learning aspect of all of this. But that is a great song for that. It's one of the best ones I think I've heard yet. It's a very good one.
Definitely listen to that more than a few times while driving across the country.
And singing and screaming with her.
Yes. When the fatigue was hitting, I would just blast Alanis or Third Eye Blind, and I would just start singing as loud as I could in the middle of nowhere.
Have you ever seen, there's a movie, it was a series of shows on the BBC. It's Rob Brydon and I've forgotten who it is, British comedians. And it's called The Trip to Italy.
I haven't seen
and
that.
And they're actors and they're just basically playing themselves. But there's this whole running theme with Alanis that one of the guys is dating a younger woman and she loves Alanis. And so every time they get in the car, it's a different Alanis song. I'll send you a clip. It's really funny. It's good. And they try to sing like her. It's quite cute. The last of these sets of questions that I always ask is what advice you would give to people newly diagnosed with either long COVID or chronic illness, if you have any lessons learned that you would share.
First, I would want to tell them what they are feeling is real. It's not their fault and they are not alone, no matter what anyone tells them. And, you know, the sooner they start to understand and accept what is happening, the sooner they might start to see some improvements. So you do have to be willing to investigate a little bit and learn, but you have to figure out what works for you and not compare your journey to anyone else's, because what works for one person might not work for another. What is easy for someone to have access to is entirely stressful and out of reach for someone else. So you just have to figure out what works for you, accept that is what you can do, and find a way to move forward.
That comparison is so hard, especially when the community is largely based on social media and people don't always share the low parts and you don't know someone's full story. Like, I've had messages from people saying, I can't believe you can do X, Y, and Z. And I'm like, yeah, but you can drive and I can't drive. So it's so different for each person. And there is grief in it. And that's another thing that it took me a long time to realize, that I was feeling legitimate grief and dealing with that before I could move into the acceptance part, which is just another stage of grief, right?
Yeah.
It's hard to, no one talks about the fact that there is grief in illness.
Grief is in recovery too. You know, even
true.
When you reach this level of health that you're content with, you're still grieving what you missed out on. There's a lot to celebrate and a lot to be grateful and thankful for, but that grief never goes away. It's going to pop up even when you think you're past it. So you just have to allow yourself to feel those feelings, but make sure not to dwell on them too much.
Yeah. And that's probably going to happen too. But Julie, is there anything that we didn't talk about that you wanted to talk about? I have one of these brains like a sieve, so you have to guide me, you have to coach me.
Not specifically. There's so much information in my brain that I would be happy to share if I was asked the right question, but I can't tap into it because I don't even know it's there, but it's there.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I think one that I would be curious about is sort of, what are the common challenges that you're seeing among people who work with you? Because I think that could be helpful for people to, sometimes we get lost in thinking that we're the only one going through a certain type of symptom, especially because so much of long COVID is so freaking weird and it is so highly individualized. But are there any particular patterns or challenges that you see emerging?
I think the biggest challenge is being able to differentiate between baseline symptoms and post-exertional malaise, or maybe MCAS symptoms and post-exertional malaise, because they all show up in a similar way. They're all related to inflammation, but some would require you to skip or modify movement, whereas some might benefit from movement. So there are times where you have to challenge the symptoms, challenge the hesitations, and show your brain that some movement is safe and beneficial despite the symptoms being there. And that I think is the hardest part, because you have to have a little bit of courage and willingness to experiment, because sometimes you might realize, oh, I should have skipped that movement. I tried to challenge those symptoms, but yeah, no, I realized that I shouldn't have done that. But now you have the information, and you'll know that next time, if you feel a certain way, you know to rest and recover. So that I think is pretty common across the board with most individuals, and myself included. You have to try things even when you don't feel well to see that they are helpful.
Yeah. And that is scary, because you don't know what the impact will be, because one day it could be fine. And the next day it could be something completely different. I imagine too, I mean, I've dealt a lot with like depersonalization and not trusting my body, and that must be a huge component to that.
Yeah. There's a lot of anxiety and fear that builds up. Like I said before, you know, if your post-exertional malaise is repeated physical trauma, so the brain starts to anticipate that there's a threat around every corner. So you have to figure out a way to switch that off and instill this level of confidence and safety in your body, in your brain, in your nervous system. And with the right approach to movement, you're able to do that slowly and without even realizing it. But there are certainly other ways to rewire the brain, but you typically have to pair cognitive strategies or mental strategies like thought flipping or self-talk visualization with action. And that's where the movement program can be so beneficial. So if someone's doing a brain rewiring, brain retraining program and not seeing any benefit to it, then they might need to pair that with some type of action, because brain rewiring won't work if you're just lying on the couch and in bed and not doing anything, because we need experiences to reinforce those new thought patterns,
right,
and get the brain off of that cycle of anticipating threats.
That's also kind of a little bit like EMDR, isn't it? Because you can do that not just with the rapid eye movement, but walking with someone and getting yourself in step, or even going for a walk and processing something that you've been through. If you get into a sort of synchronized thing, movement really helps, I guess, move the feelings through your body, move the fear and anxiety through your body. And like you said, it's finding the way that your body responds to that healthily. Mm-hmm. And that does take experimentation and willingness to put yourself out there and be very vulnerable. So
yeah.
Are there any things you have coming up that you're excited about, or any plans that you have for the future that you're like willing to share? What's on the agenda for you?
I wish I had big, exciting things in the works. But no, I'm kind of enjoying a routine and keeping things low key right now and trying to figure out how to travel a little bit more, because I have this flexibility to work from wherever I want. I have set working hours. My clients know when I'm available. I'm pretty accessible during those times. If I'm away from my computer for any reason, I have an alarm on my phone that goes off every single hour during my working day. So at least once an hour, I'm checking my emails and my coaching apps. So, you know, I could be wherever I wanted to be and do what I needed to do, but there's this part of me, I have a little bit of anxiety, maybe separation anxiety from my computer, from my phone, from my clients, because I want to be there to support them and I want to do my job to the best of my ability. But I also need to remember that I need to find that work balance, work-life balance that I have lost over the years, because I went straight from being sick, only taking one day off, like during my entire, in the last 4 years, well, in the last 12 years, I've only taken one sick day. And that was the day I was in the ER with COVID.
Oh my God, you
I have other clear boundaries, not working on the weekends, you know, I take an occasional holiday off. But yeah, no, I went from straight from being sick to working more than I've ever worked in my life. And there is no work-life balance, essentially. So I'm trying to reclaim that. I do feel pretty centered. I don't feel stressed about work. I'm excited to log on each day, but I know that life is more than working. I'm not trying to live to work. You know what I mean?
Oh, I do.
Trying to figure that out and hopefully be a little bit more mobile. So yeah, we'll see. I don't know where I'm going to go.
That's kind of fun though.
Yeah. I like traveling by myself, but it'd also be nice to travel with others as long as they are still masking on planes and in public places, because I still do.
Yes. Because we have to take care of ourselves, because you can't serve everybody that you're helping if you get sick. I do like to ask people who, well, everybody who's working during all of this, what kind of, you've touched on this already, that you have very set boundaries for time when you will work, but what other sort of accommodations have you had to put in place for yourself to balance? I mean, you're trying to balance it, but do you have any tips for that? aside from what you've mentioned, or things that you want to try to implement for yourself?
Well, the first 2 years I was working from bed and doing all of my coaching from bed. I wasn't offering coaching calls for my movement clients. I didn't typically do coaching calls for my endurance athletes. So all of what I was doing was online through email and apps. So when I started launching coaching calls, I had to be pretty strategic about when I would do those and make sure they were spaced out throughout the week. But yeah, setting boundaries, setting expectations, I think is important, because when I start working with someone, I give them clear expectations, what they can expect from me. And not only does that help them know what to expect, it helps decrease my anxiety level. And I'm not worrying about, oh, they think I'm going to respond or I'm not there to respond.
Yeah.
You know, I want them to be able to learn how to make decisions on their own at times without me being available. Because like I said before, my goal is to give them the tools and information that they need. So yes, remember to prioritize your own health and well-being over anything else, because if you're not feeling well, you're not going to do a good job. Initially, I definitely had to cut down on pretty much anything and everything in order to be able to continue working. Yeah. You know, that was the only thing that I made sure I was well enough to do each day.
Good
so
advice.
I was still taking care of myself, but at a bare minimum level. I wasn't socializing, talking with other people. All of my energy was going towards working. But over time, just as my body adapted to physical activity, I realized that my brain was adapting to my cognitive exertion. So, and my nervous system as well. When I first started doing coaching calls and I was wearing my Garmin watch, my stress level, you know, my body battery would just be draining and draining and draining during a coaching call. And now it recharges. So coaching calls are restorative.
Really?
Even though I'm an introvert, my physical capacity, my aerobic capacity, my parasympathetic nervous system are so strong that a coaching call to me is resting. So I hope that gives other people hope that even though something feels challenging and is very draining now, doesn't mean it will always be. You just have to make sure you balance those bigger exertions with the appropriate amount of rest and recovery. So that's one reason why I have set working hours completely offline on the weekends. It gives my brain that opportunity to check out, stay off screens, and recharge before the week ahead.
You have just totally shifted how I'm going to start looking at my Garmin now, because I only pay attention to the drain and I haven't paid attention to anything other than seeing if it charges at night. So I'm going to start looking for that, because I might find patterns that I don't realize are things that I find restorative. So thank you very much, because that's a really cool notice.
I would like to make another note about Garmin watches or just any wrist-based heart rate watch. So wrist-based heart rate monitors are notoriously inaccurate. So there are times when I had worn my watch and, you know, my stress levels were sky high, but it was inaccurate. So that's one thing to look out for. And that can, it can certainly be real, but it's possible. Another thing that can happen when you're out walking is your watch starts picking up on your walking cadence instead of your heart rate. So if your heart rate's like 100 and then you start seeing it at 120 suddenly, but it doesn't feel like it's gone any higher, your watch is probably picking up your walking cadence.
I didn't know.
And it gets stuck. It can get stuck on that regardless of what you do. So
don't make it your personality. Use it as a guide.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Thank you for that too, because sometimes I can make it my personality.
Right. One of the best things I did was put my Garmin watch in a drawer and leave it there.
I've had to do that at times.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I was not tuning into how I actually felt. I was just going by the numbers, and that's dangerous.
Yeah.
All right. Can you tell us where everyone can find you and your website and everything like that, so that they can follow you and maybe try to get to work with you?
So my Instagram is at movement underscore with underscore me or M-E. And website is www.movementwithme.com. Both the website and the Instagram page have links to access my call scheduling calendar. So if you want to book a 15-minute discovery call to see if coaching would be a good fit, then that's an option. Completely free, no commitments, and just an opportunity to make sure that coaching would be the best option for you before we would get started later on.
I love it. Thank you so much for doing this today. I really appreciate it. It was so good to get to talk to you. I keep saying I selfishly just set this up so I can talk to people I like.
Well, thank you for the invite again. It's been a pleasure, and I hope that we have many more conversations in the future.
Me too. Me too.
Thank you for tuning in to A Friend for the Long Haul. I want to remind listeners that while our conversations may touch on medical topics, I'm not a medical professional and neither are most of our guests. The content provided here is for informational and entertainment purposes only. Any advice or information shared should not be considered a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always consult with a qualified healthcare provider regarding any medical concerns or conditions. Additionally, I'm committed to transparency in advertising. Any advertisements or sponsored content featured in these episodes will be clearly disclosed as such. Lastly, I acknowledge that the recording of this podcast takes place on the traditional lands of the Arapaho, the Cheyenne, the Sioux, and the Ute peoples. Again, thanks for listening, and stay tuned for more episodes of A Friend for the Long Haul.